just a unanimous vote.
Welcome, everyone. I'd like to open the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. Mascot Day, as it were, up here. We were trying to figure out earlier what mascot this committee would use. My staff suggested dinosaurs, and so we ended that conversation.
That might apply, Mr. Chair, to
me,
Arnie and me, but you're younger, so.
So before we get to that issue, we have a couple of housekeeping things to take care of. It'll take 5 or 10 minutes here. So first of all, I'd like to open up a work session on Senate Bill 270 for purposes of adopting the dash threes to the University Board governance bill. There are some technical tweaks at the work group that came out of the work group. We've been meeting last week with Representatives Dembro and Johnson and the lawyers from the universities and the Oregon University system. And I would say that while most of those tweaks are technical, there are a couple of things that I would point out. And one of the changes that were made is that the boards of these three schools will be the Board of Trustees. In the previous amendment, one was directors, one was trustees, and one was regents. And the thinking was that they should all be consistently the same thing, and it was trustees that was agreed to, at least tentatively. The second change that I would point out is last week when we had our a work session on the amendment with our LC chief here, Dan Gilbert, we looked at the task force that looks at the next step here on regionals and what to do with the three regionals and OIT. And we had testimony from Eastern Oregon President Bob Davies, and he landed a punch in that he was able to convince the work group and us so that that task force will now include a phrase of geographic location when selecting that task force, if you look at the regional. So that's a change there. There's quite a bit of work, I think, still to do on the bonding part of this. It's not totally ironed out. So there will be some more refinements to come on this, but I was hoping we could adopt the dash threes to be made public and printed so that this becomes our latest draft. So there you go. We do have, the amendments just came out this morning. We do have Dan here today. Should any of you have any technical questions on some of the technical changes?
Yeah. On page 214, line 4.
So, if not, let's go ahead and adopt this amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just appreciate you being pro-timber like you are, based on the size of these amendments. So.
That's right.
Chair Hass, I move to adopt the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 270, dated March 28, 2013.
Senator Knope moves to adopt the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 270, dated March 28, 2013. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes and the amendments are adopted. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 270 and open up. Well, actually, I just need to make an announcement on Senate Bill 755. That was the minority bill, teacher minority bill that we heard the other day. We do not yet have the fiscal documents required for us to send this to the Senate floor, and they are looking at some potential costs of that bill, and I'm not sure why or what they're looking into it, but we don't have that yet, and hopefully we'll iron this out and have it ready to go next week. So we will carry that over to a future date. And I want to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 702. I'm sorry, I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 702. This is the bill that was sponsored by Senator Girod that directs a certain percentage of the opportunity grant to qualified students majoring in science, technology, engineering, and math. There is an amendment, a dash one, that I'd like us to consider. This bill does have a $150,000 fiscal cost to it. We do not have a prior reference to send it to Ways and Means. We just have directions to pass bills or reject them. So I think what I'd like to do, if the committee is willing, is to adopt the amendments, pass the bill on to the Senate floor. It will get to the President's office, and he can decide what to do with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, we can do the motion with a recommendation to the president, and I think that would be appropriate. In other words, to say we move the bill to the floor to do pass a recommendation and with a recommendation that the president refer the bill to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Byer.
I'm not sure. It doesn't change any appropriation. I'm not sure why it would need to go to Ways and Means.
I think it was OUS and LFO determined it would require another FTE, one full FTE.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, I'd recommend that we make our intention known just to simplify it for the president.
That would be fine with me if you want to add that to the motion, Senator Knope.
If you remember right, they said that they'd have to change their documents because they don't have a place to put this on the documents. That's where the cost was coming in. I believe. That's my understanding. It'll take them a while to get themselves geared up so they can actually...
Fine.
Yeah, they use a national form.
That doesn't talk about majors.
So we have the dash ones.
Mr. Chair, we talked to Senator Girard about the amendment. He knows about it, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Chair Hass, I move to adopt the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 702, dated March 13, 2013.
Senator Knope moves to dash the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 702, dated March 13, 2013. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Hass, I move Senate Bill 702 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, with a recommendation that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
You know, when I was in journalism school, we tried not to say the same word more than three times in a sentence. But, Senator
Thankfully, Knope, I didn't go to journalism school, so we're good.
Moves Senate Bill 702 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a recommendation that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, I just, Mr. Chair, based on the fiscal here, I just appreciate the OUS paying good money for their position here, because it's $152,000. I assume that's for a biennium, so somebody's going to make some good money with just that position. So we're paying a living wage there.
I did have some conversations with Senator Girard, and I do think there is a lot of merit to his idea here, and so I'm committed to whether this goes through Ways and Means or straight to the floor to helping him pass it. So I believe it is a pile of a policy of the state to say, hey, we have a need. We need more science and math majors in our public universities, and this is our priority. And if you want help with your tuition, this is one of our priorities. So.
You know, I agree with you. I think it's a great statement for us to make because the STEM has been a priority, and I think that needs to be reflected.
Further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Senator
Aye.
Vice Chair Knope.
Aye.
Chair Hass.
Aye. The measure passes with a due pass recommendation and a recommendation to the Senate President that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I think just in case he chooses not to do that, we should probably assign the carrier that it would come out of Ways and Means with anyway, and I'd assign it to Senator Girard.
So. I think that's a good idea. All right. So we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 702, and I would open up a concurrent public hearing on Senate Bill 215 and Senate Bill 501. And my understanding, maybe you could correct me, Councilor Donovan, that we were discussing here today Senate Bill 215 with the dash two amendments. That's our working draft here that we're going to be debating. And maybe you could give us a brief summary of that amendment.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 215, as drafted, prohibits the State Board of Education from adopting rules regarding sanctions for mascots. the committee has been asked to consider the Dash 2 amendments, which are, there are some hard copies available in the back of the committee room. The Dash 2 amendments replace the current version of the measure and alters it. It allows for the use of mascots that represent a specific Native American tribe if the governing body of that tribe has entered into an agreement describing acceptable uses of the mascot with the entity using the mascot.
Okay, senators.
Thank you, Eric. I'll start. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jeff Cruz, Senator, Senate District 1, and as a matter of full disclosure, a graduate of Roseburg High School and a lifelong proud Roseburg Indian, let's just go back to the ruling by the state board on this issue, which puzzled me greatly and confused me greatly. When we look at all of the real issues in education they should be dealing with, why they circled in on this one, I'm not sure. I would say, Ms. Chair, one thing, that to put a derogatory connotation on a school mascot, no matter what that mascot is nonsensical for the students and the community and the school. It's a matter of pride. Pure and simple, a matter of pride. And it is for me, always has been, always will be. But what really puzzles me in this is to a degree, we created something that might actually make situations worse by this ruling by the state board. And I'd point out, and I'm going to speak specifically to my school and my community, and the fact that over the years, our work in very close collaboration with the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Indians, which is the tribe in Douglas County, we have reached all the accommodations. And to the point, for example, that when we put in an artificial turf on our football field 10 years ago, the emblem in the center of that field is a feather. You know, so all issues have been worked out at the local level. The relationship between our tribe in Douglas County and not only Roseburg High School, but all other schools is magnificent and very harmonious, as is the tribe's relationship with the rest of the community. They are one of the biggest benefactors to community services we have, and it's widely recognized that they are such. By the state board making that decision, they're potentially creating conflict where none now currently exist in virtually every part of the state where there is some tribal implication to a mascot or a symbol of a school. Those things have already been worked out. You know, so to a degree, what the state board did was create a solution to a problem that for the most part didn't exist. And I'd also point out that this wasn't anything that was brought forth by any of the 9 federally recognized tribes in the state of Oregon. And folks on that level will speak to this at a later point in time. But let's look at, for example, at specifically at Roseburg, by the ruling of the state board, the school is going to have to pay a significant amount of money to get new uniforms, to remove logos, to remove symbols. And who's going to pay for that? Okay, who's going to pay for it? So we are tasking a school district with an expense that is unnecessary because all the agreements have already been reached. You know, Mr. Chair, these issues have been dealt with at the local level and dealt with very well. I think this was an issue brought to the board by a very small group of folks who, in my mind, seem to be dissatisfied with everything. But I would suggest that if this was an issue that the 9 federally recognized tribes in the state of Oregon had, it would have come through the commission and it would have been dealt with that way. That's not how it happened. So, Mr. Chair, basically what this bill does with the Dash 2 amendment, it defines in the statute as non-discrimination. If indeed an arrangement has been reached between a local tribe and the school district and everybody's happy with it, it's no longer discrimination, and so the issue goes away. And truly, that's all we're trying to do is the state board has created a problem where none exists. We are trying to eliminate that problem and have the decisions made at the local level where they deserve to be made. And I would have to say that there are a whole lot of people in my community that are majorly upset about what has happened, because we love our school, we love everything about Roseburg High School, and we are, like I said, very proud to be the Roseburg Indians, and there is nothing negative in that, and there's no way anybody could put a negative connotation on that. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Dash 2 amendments have come been put together in cooperation with members of representatives from the tribes. I think this is a good piece of legislation, and I think it solves the problem in a non in a way that will avoid the potential conflict and that the ruling by the state board created. And Ms. Chair, we don't, you know, I've been in this process for 16 years. We have done a lot of work over the years to harmonize the relationship between our tribes and state government and local governments, and we have done some pretty magnificent work. To a degree, this ruling potentially takes us back a step, and we don't need to do that. So I would urge the committee to strongly consider the Dash 2 amendments and move the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Close.
Thank you very much. Do you mind giving staff that? Sorry. Thank you, Senator Haas, Chair Haas, and members of the Senate Education and Workforce Committee for hearing Senate Bill 501 today. I'm Senator Betsy Close. I'm bringing this bill to you on behalf of Linn County Commissioner John Lindsay, who is with me today. John represents Lebanon, Oregon, in Linn County, as I do also. Lebanon High School experienced similar problems in 2012 when their high school mascot, the Warriors, came under fire from the State Board of Education. In response, the school board held hearings to ascertain if members of the community were offended by the name Warriors. Finding general agreement, including tribal agreement, they made the decision to keep their name. The State Board of Education is moving towards the withholding of educational funding for school districts that do that. I will yield at this point to Commissioner Lindsay, and Mr. Chair, at this point, we do not have an amendment that we're offering.
Okay. Lindsay?
Was this the amendment that you just talked about with? Okay.
No.
Okay. Oh, okay. Good afternoon. I'm John Lindsay. I'm a Linn County Board, a member of the Linn County Board of Commissioners. I was just in front of Senator Rowland's other committee here last week. What I did was I had to, because of this issue, put some of my thoughts into writing, because this is a personal issue with me, as I will explain here shortly. I come before this committee today to allow communities to continue proud, scholastic, and athletic traditions and end Oregon's newly codified racism in our state. Last year, across Oregon, communities banded together to try and fight a bad decision by the Oregon Board of Education, a decision that rooted itself in permanently segregating Native American history and pride from our institutions of learning by separating Native Americans from Oregon citizens and banning imagery of Native Americans in open Oregon society. I think this is a very important issue. I think this is an issue where we've intersected political correctness and state policy, and ignorance meets stupidity. Banning a particular race of peoples from learning institutions is not as simplistic as Big Bird singing, "One of these things is not like the other." The decision was imposed on Oregonians by the State Board of Education. Last spring, when I testified in front of the Oregon School Board, I pointed out a few problems with the original proposed blanket of all things Native American. I myself am a proud Lebanon warrior. As I pointed out in testimony, the term warrior is not Native American. The word is rooted in Old Norman, meaning weir, or one that makes war. Later on, the new French term warrior would be used to describe tribes that supplied Native Americans to French to fight battles. In other words, the fighting man. The meaning was to describe and honor the hardy, fearless, and determined Native men who fought these battles. The school board had to give in and choose not to ban the word warrior. That's good, because the word pirate itself means thief. I also testified to the fact that the word tribe is a biblical word and worldwide. Again, the board agreed, and there was no ban placed on that particular word. The word Indian is also not Native American. I will not discuss that word here, because any eighth grader in the United States should know why that term was used. If they didn't, then the State Board of Education is really not doing their job. I would, as a side note, point out that now we have historical books by authors such as those James Fenimore Cooper are now being banned from reading lists at universities because of political correctness in their terms in talking about Native Americans. But this is an issue that the legislators will have to deal with at a different time, because history is history and we cannot change that. In Oregon, mascots that are warriors are Native Americans, but they also include Trojan, Spartan, Vikings, and Celtics, properly pronounced Celtic if you're from that region of the world. Those are white warriors, and the Department of Education seems to be okay with that. We have religious themes and chivalry, such as knights, lancers, valiant saints, and cavaliers. We have historical warriors, such as Olympians, Titans, Bruins, Saxons, Scots, Highlanders, and, of course, the original arena sportsman, the gladiator. We have in Oregon and the U.S., and even with the U.S. Constitution, provisions for the monarchs, royals, and royal Scots. Politically incorrect mascots abound this state: pioneers, pirates, loggers, raiders, outlaws, and, of course, the Catholic fighting Irish. No offense, but I would not really want to be a Madison High senator. We do, however, have mascots that include cowboys and buckaroos. The last mascot I'm going to mention is the Sheridan Samurai. I would note that samurais historically are known for carrying two swords. In skilled hands, this allowed the removal of your enemy's head with ease. I'm also intrigued. This also intrigues my interest in Eastern religions. Last year, my father's sons, who he raised Catholic, gave him a Buddhist burial. A Buddhist burial takes 100 days. I only say this because my father was very upset when he came back from Rome at the amount of artwork not being shared with the world because of political correctness. Having mentioned all of the mascots, I would note there are no shortages of ethnic or religious mascots in this state. That is what has angered me as a citizen, since the school board arbitrarily stripped Native American identity from our schools. America is a diverse and varied country. To strip Native American Indians from the public square, I believe, is an irreprehensible act. I was at a basketball tournament in Lebanon one weekend last spring, just before the board took this action. I had my granddaughter with me. We talked about the sculpted warrior on the side of the building. She thought it was really neat looking, and Indians must be cool. I then explained to her that the Choctaw in her DNA is what makes her skin color the way it is. You see, between my wife and I, we associate with four different tribes. I also told her that some in government wanted to take away those symbols of her heritage. The next few minutes was a teachable moment, not for the six-year-old that seems to get it, but the apparent adults that seem to find hate in this. The state school board, in rendering its decision, was nice enough to give permission for the Lebanon High School to keep the metal Jim Warrior for now. But all supposed American Indian symbols had to go, including paintings, carvings, and statues. Let me stop there for a moment. I'm going to disclose right here that I'm a Midwest war veteran. It is that type of logic and thinking and ignorance that exists widespread in that region of the world that produces dead people every day. That is what I have learned in my short and interesting life, and I am ashamed that this is actually taking place in this state. Lebanon, like many other schools, possess historic painted murals and sculptures. To the state, they will all have to go. What kind of message does this send our kids? That Indians are bad folks and we should lock them up on their reservations with casinos and duty-free items? I think not. The Marine Detachment sergeants at one time that were assigned to my division for security after operating Praying Mantis were all 100% Native Americans. I'm pretty happy that they didn't stay on the reservation. I would not equate these actions by the state school board with the Germans placing markings on Jews and eradicating them from the public square. The school board just wants all Native American imagery and artwork removed from our private and public school property institutions. That sounds a lot like the same thing to me. So to conform with the order, the artwork has to go or the schools face financial retribution. You know, when the Nazis raided churches and the Russian communists took over churches and fascists ran Italy, they didn't destroy the artwork. If my dad were alive right now, he'd be stunned that his son is sitting here defending artwork in the Oregon legislature. My dad was a bit of an art lover, in case you didn't realize. The sad reality is that I'm in front of the Oregon legislature defending public art from destruction and censorship by public educators. These are educators that made this decision. I can't stress that enough. Educators are banning a race of people from the public square. I'm stunned every time I think of that. As the kids would say today, what's up with that? Over the last couple of years, many tribes have come out against these supposed bans. I hope more tribes are realizing what's going on. It will only be two more generations before we have watered down tribes to the point of what most young people will not realize what was original Native Americans. In my opinion, after reading the studies that groups behind these bans had produced for the Oregon Board of Education, I believe we're looking at a much, much, much deeper and more serious problem. Recently, Frank Clortier, leader of the Sakowa Chippewa tribe, when defending mascots with the NCAA, said, and this is his quote, "My issue here is how can a warrior painted on the side of a gymnasium wall cause underperformance and marginalization of students? I find this to be a weak argument at best." I happen to agree with Mr. Clortier. But I believe after reading the materials, ignorance and racism is actually behind these bans. ESPN and other NCAA sports organizations have numerous polls and other data that keep coming to the same conclusion over and over, and that is 4 out of 5 individuals in the United States who claim Native American ancestry think Native American mascots are an honor. So the question comes back to the studies that I found disturbing. Each elected official sitting in this room right now knows what quality polling looks like and knows what quality public policy studies look like. I break these issues into 3 categories. Do you beat your wife? That's a question and a query. That's a gathering of facts. Another one would be the push-pull and slanted assumption, which would be, when did you quit beating your wife? The assumption in that statement is that all men beat their wives, and they can stop, though. So the determining fact is when did you quit beating your wife? If you'd never done it, well, then obviously you quit beating your wife the day you were married. Then we have the third tier of this question, which is how often do you beat your wife? This, again, has a built-in assumption that men beat their wives. That's for granted. The questioner in here is taking that for granted. All the answers to the questions have that assumption built into the answer. That is the disturbing assumption that I read in almost every one of these studies, was that as far as I know, no one has really read what they did. The studies tell more about the individual asking the question than it does anything else, and that's what I found very disturbing, that public policy was based on those faulty studies.
Commissioner, we have a lot of people to get through here, so I was hoping if you could conclude.
What I will skip to is this, is that the bill, I want to just point out something real quick that the senator brought up in the other one, is that in the state of Oregon, the headdress normally associated with Native American tribes honor symbols in this state. All but 2 schools have a mascot that has that. Those symbols are not associated with any known tribe in the state of Oregon. So we run into that problem. The Lebanon warrior is not an Oregon tribal symbol. So then it comes down to which tribes are you going to ban and how are you going to select these, because tribes are individual nations. I right now can make a phone call and have a tribe support the Lebanon warrior if that was the way we'd go, but it's not going to be a local tribe. What I do want to point out is the bill that we have introduced here, 501, is to accomplish 2 things. And that is that first, it restores the legislative authority stolen by the Oregon School Board from the Oregon Legislature. They did so by granting themselves the authority to amend the Legislative Assembly's budget without permission and to penalize individual school districts without legislative action. They were never granted this authority by the Oregon legislature. Second, this bill would put local issues back in front of local school boards and communities. Some would say, well, that means they could adopt any type of mascot. Well, you know, Oregonians are pretty level-headed and reasonable people. They've done pretty well so far. I would trust them completely with that decision. And with that, I'll go ahead and conclude the testimony. And if you'd like, I can go ahead and submit questions? Written remarks at a later date.
That'd be great. Like.
Thanks.
Any questions for our elected officials here or senators? Well, we'll continue debating. Thank you for presenting.
Thank you very much.
I think we do have someone here from the State Board of Education, Art Paz. Maybe you could come up and shed some light on this from your perspective. That'd be great.
Good afternoon, Senator and Chair Hise. And senators, some of which I've met under different circumstances. My name is Artemiopause, and in Spanish, it's Artemiopause. For most people, they just call me Art. And for this session, I want to just reflect on the process that we went through at the State Board. I think it would take quite an extensive response if I were to respond to the testimony that you just heard. Because much of that testimony really is contradictory to the process and the evaluation and the OARs and the intent of the resolution. So one has to read very carefully that resolution. We would not be here today if it weren't for the courage of a young man who's in high school that is a Native American, and that person came to us. And his name is Shea Butler. And I think that when you listen to Shea Butler or read about Shea Butler, you need to think about Rosa Parks. You need to understand that this man had the courage to call racism what it is. He witnessed a defamation of his Native tribal ceremonies at a halftime event, at a basketball event. He came to us and articulated the harm that did, not only to him personally, but the effrontery to his tribal group. It was an incredible moment, a teachable moment, for everybody in that audience. It was clear that we weren't developing the kind of critical thinking and the overall issues of how do you deal with how somebody uses a stereotype to refer to a cultural linguistic group and a cultural social group that in most cases has thousands of years of history in the Northwest. It was clear that the mascots were really flying in the face in most issues with how to manage this. I can tell you that the testimony that we received over a 5.5-year period that culminated in the last months of our decision, which occurred on May 2012, articulated a number of issues. The preponderance of the response that we received from the natives was that this is incredibly harmful, that we needed to make a change. We needed to be more sensitive to the cultural ramifications of using stereotypes that then become tacit approval for young adults to criticize people that don't look like themselves or culturally have different ways of putting their world together. This was really at the most visceral level, that was a gut punch, because the State Board of Education is looking at equal opportunity for all students. As the governor has stated, as all of our mandates indicate, we are supposed to be advancing the articulation of methods that approve or improve education for all students. Now, if you can discriminate and isolate the 1 or 2%, I can tell you that there are a lot of other people that have richness and cultural backgrounds that are frightened by this. They're not certain how you're going to do that to them in the future. And I'm going to back up a little bit further because I know that there are some people that have a number of years with some of these issues. I was an artillery officer in 1965. I was supposed to teach and instruct young men on battlefield survivability. I can tell you that when I did the research and I looked at counterinsurgency and I looked at Mao Zedong and Che Guevara and General Giap that defeated the French at Dien Bien Phu, and we were in the middle of the Vietnam crisis, I also used the Native American cultural examples of how the Navajos and their language and culture articulated a certain kind of well-being in the battlefield that protected all Americans. And they did it because they had a language that the enemy in the Pacifics could not demystify. They could not understand it. I can tell you that the Native Americans and the cultural ramification of how they communicate to the people on their campuses, with their faculty, with their family, with their tribes, may be the next person that has the magic that creates the next Bill Gates. I need to know as a person working on the state board, that I'm not compromising any decision making or creating stereotypes that restrict and guard how people express their understanding of how the world can go together in complex, rich, creative, and innovative ways. That's behind our process. It was a 5.5-year process, and it was a messaging system that went out to the field, to all of the school districts, and said, help us understand that. It ultimately culminated in May of 2012 with the decision that you now are questioning. I can tell you that your questions will subvert the goals and the vision of the state of Oregon and the governor of our great state in making equal opportunities for all people. And we need to really thoughtfully and comprehensively look at this. We had testimony from experts that had testified to the U.S. Congress that had deep understanding of all of the issues that were cited just a few moments ago. And we considered all of those. So I'm sorry if I got a little emotional, but I think that you need to understand that the board is looking at equal opportunity for all people in the state of Oregon. And that includes the Native American tribes and their sovereign conditions and their sovereign states and their wonderful dialogue that they have in our public schools. So.
Thank you for your testimony. I don't think you ever have to apologize for passion. When was the board's decision on this?
It was May of 2012.
May of 2012, okay. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of versions here, but the one that's right in front of us allows for the use of a mascot that represents a specific Native American tribe if the governing body of that tribe has entered into an agreement and describes the acceptable use of the mascot and with the entity that's using the mascot. I was just wondering your opinion of that fairly narrow language.
Sure. I haven't read the exact language, but I can tell you that in testimony that we received, we found out that many of the school districts were not even aware of the tribal organization that would be related to the mascot that they were using. And those that were aware were using older precedents and models of historic context that did not amplify or inform the Native groups and the rich cultural history that they could represent, but were really represented by a stereotypical single issue. And it seemed to do a disservice to having a deeper understanding of Native American cultures. So.
Questions of Senator Cruz?
Yeah. How many of Oregon's 9 federally recognized tribes came in and testified in support of this ruling by the state board?
I'm not certain of the exact number, but our executive secretary is in the audience, and she may have that information. But I would suspect that there were probably at least 2, possibly as many as 4.
That came in and officially representing the tribe testified.
Yes, and we had
between that and just being a member
that also were representing tribal groups and
Okay, I do find it interesting in if I could in your example of I'm aware of the history of what happened with the Navajo language in Vietnam. It was a brilliant move, by the way. It truly was. But you're kind of setting, I mean, you're you're doing a stereotype there in and of yourself by stating that, and it's a positive stereotype. Mm-hmm. And I would also suggest that if I had the time and the resources, I could bring you a whole room of experts to testify on anything you want in any direction you want.
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Cruz, one response, the example I had was of World War II, was not Vietnam.
You're right. Okay. I'm sorry, but yeah, okay. You're right.
Thank you. Representative Springer, I know that you have been working on similar legislation in the other chamber.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. Sherry Springer, State Representative, House District 17, come from Sio, Lebanon area. In the interest of full disclosure, Lebanon is the home of Lebanon Warriors, a school I attended for 1 year, my freshman year, a couple or more decades ago, and where my son is currently a student. So I know that you're introducing or that you're entertaining the Dash 2 amendments today, which obviously I'm very supportive of. That mirrors the language of a bill that I've been working on, and I was part of this process when it first started. This was kicked off the evening of our last day in the 2012 session, the short session. I got home and I was greeted with the front page that said they're banning mascots. And of course, my son was angry and said, "What are you going to do about it?" And I said, "Nothing tonight. Thank you very much." But I started the next day with calling up, instead of calling up the football coach and my son's football team and all those kids and the people from Lebanon, I called tribal members, I called representatives of tribes, I called lots of folks that I would see as maybe on the other side of this issue of me, and I said, "What do I not understand? Because I want to understand what I don't know." And I was greeted universally with, "You do understand this isn't a big issue for us." Some, frankly, and I don't know what the testimony has been earlier before I came in here because I was in another committee testifying on another bill, but I had multiple people say, "We don't need you fighting this battle for us." And so I stepped back and I really looked at the approach here, and I went to all the hearings that ODE had, talked to lots of people about it, really tried to understand, and what I came to the conclusion of is the ruling by ODE really stopped communication, and it really thwarted the ability to build relationships. On the flip side of that, in one of the committees that I testified in, one of the hearings for the state board that I testified in, I brought some amendment language that you're looking at today for ODE's rule. And I said, "You know, I think this is a better way for us to have a relationship and a conversation." As I walked out of the room, I had to leave early, somebody walked up to me, he handed me his cards, he says, "I'm president of the Kalapuya Tribe Council, Tribal Council, and we are your local tribe, and I'm so glad that we're starting a conversation and we support your amendment language." So what I have heard and experienced in the days since that ruling in May is we have conversations starting that have never started before. And yeah, I'm the first to say those first conversations were, "You can't do this to me. Go get ODE, Sherry." Well, I don't see how that gets us anywhere. That's why I didn't draft my bill that way. I drafted it to create dialogue. And so simply, you know what that amendment language does? It creates relationship and it creates conversation between the closest local tribe and a school district on the use of the mascot. Now, through testimony, to my knowledge, and I say this with a fair level of confidence, there wasn't a current use of a mascot that was brought forward that was offensive. There were lots of horrendous examples that were 20 and 30 years old, and they were horrendous, and they were awful. And I'm glad those practices have stopped. I would have felt very uncomfortable. But this is not a new idea. There are already tribes in the state communicating with their local school district and changing the use of the mascot. That's what we want. So let me tell you just a couple things that you may not have heard today. Because frankly, I've spent a ton of time on this bill. It amazes me how much conversation this has generated. So at the Department of Education, they have a 0.25 Indian education specialist. 0.25, okay? That's 10 hours a week. Used to be more. Budget cuts, it's less. I know this because I sit on education subcommittee for Ways and Means. The conversation day after day has been, how do you restore that? How do you bring more robust value to that position and what that position stands for? And of course, we're cited with the dropout rates among Native Americans, which are awful. Dropout rate among anybody is awful. And that needs to be addressed. I would argue this is a piece of that. So we have 0.25, 10 hours a week, one person in this state working on Native American education. Now we have school districts that will actively be engaged with their local tribes to learn, to grow, to understand each other. That's already started to occur in some areas. The other thing that I'm hearing a lot on Ways and Means, even did yesterday, was diversity. I've been wrestling with this question a lot this session for some reason, and I thought it was separate from this bill. And we're talking a lot on that committee about how, especially with the new education reforms and how we are going to create more diversity and more understanding around that diversity. And I'm not talking about a cultural awareness class. I'm talking real, robust relationships and education. And I've been wrestling with that because my communities are not diverse. They really aren't. I'll ask one of the business managers at his school district, what is your ELL population? And he goes like this. And he says, 2. I said, 2%? And he goes, no, 2 kids. That's not diverse. How do you create that in an authentic way? You have school districts engage with their local tribes. This is just one way, and it's not the way that will work in all school districts. But you have your school districts engage with your local tribes and start building that relationship and that understanding. The other thing that has surfaced through this is one of the people that in this hearing, I was teed up with a lot of witnesses for next week, and so they might be visiting us next week. Couldn't get them here today, but there is a coach, and I can use his name because he's testified a lot, and he's probably going to pop me when I get back to the high school next week and he finds out he wasn't here. But Coach Johnson, Kevin Johnson's from Oklahoma. He is a tribal member from Oklahoma. And I'm not going to say because I may mess it up and I don't want to misspeak which tribe. But he came to Lebanon in part because it's the Lebanon Warriors. He said, what a great way for me to talk about my heritage. What a great way for me to talk about Native American culture in a right way. And he says, because that is our mascot, he said, we, and his wife is also a tribal member, we've come to this community, set up roots, bought a home. They're there for good. And in part, because of our mascot, they want the opportunity to have the conversation. We have a hard time in this state hiring teachers, retaining teachers of any diverse background. We really do. It's very difficult. I think this is a piece of that solution. And I didn't bring this bill to be divisive. I didn't bring this bill to poke anybody in the eye and say, you can't. I brought this bill because it's about relationship and understanding, and that is what I've heard from testimony, regardless of what side it falls on, has been the goal of this conversation, and that's why I bring this bill. Support this amendment. I'll take any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions, Representative Springer and Senator Cruz?
Yeah, just comment in, Representative Springer. I want to thank you. My original bill was kind of a poke in the eye.
Sorry.
But I tend to be rather direct in what I do, and I'm glad we had the conversation because I think yours gets to the same conclusion and in a much more collaborative way. So thank you for that, and I want to thank other folks in this room who helped us refine that a little bit. And
absolutely.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I certainly didn't mean that as a poke in your eye, Senator, by any means.
I will admit what I do, so.
What other bills do you have that poke people in the eye?
I don't know about those bills.
Look for Cruz, and then you'll know.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's go to Justin Martin and the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde and bring your team forward, sir.
Good Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Canope, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin, and I'm here today on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, where I'm also a tribal member. I will be brief because two of my bosses are here with me today, and hopefully we can lighten the mood in this committee and let you know that we are here in support of Senate Bill 215 with the Dash 2 amendments. And we're not here to debate the merits of mascots at this point in time. What we do want to talk about today is the reality of the government-to-government process. And as all of you know, Oregon has a very unique history when it comes to the government-to-government process with tribes, from Governor Vic Atiyah and the creation of the Commission on Indian Services to Governor Kitzhaber and the Executive Order 9630, which got us down the road towards the government-to-government process, and the Oregon State Legislature actually putting that executive order into statute Senate Bill 770, which several members of this committee actually voted for. We have a truly unique situation. And the great thing is we haven't stopped there. We're looking, always looking to move in a positive manner toward the future. And we've done that on the tribal level, not just with the state government, but with the federal government and our local governments, including our local school boards. So we want to make sure that we have the opportunity and a mechanism in place to which we can continue to communicate with our local school boards and our local counties and cities, for that matter, on issues that we find to be important. Now, what you're going to hear from my council members here in a minute is how do we make this an educational moment, turn the corner, figure out what we can do in the future to better those relationships, to start teaching our children about the rich culture of Oregon's nine sovereigns. We shouldn't be teaching about other people's culture. We should be teaching about the local culture and what goes on. And how do we make ourselves better as a state through the education process? And how do we make all ourselves better as Oregonians well into the future? And we think this bill leads to that. We think it can be very helpful in the future. And so with that, we are here today, again, asking for your support, Senate Bill 215 with the Dash 2 amendments. Thank you very much.
Thank you. First of all, I'd just like to say, as a 17-year council member at Grand Ronde, I respect everybody's opinion on this, but I've...
Let me first just say welcome to the state capitol, and when you begin, just start off with your name.
Okay. My name is Ren Leno. I am the tribal chair at Grand Ronde, and I'd just like to say, as I said, my 17 years on tribal council has taught me there's two sides to every story, and you need to respect everybody's opinion. Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, and members of the Senate Education and Workforce Development Committee, my name is Ren Leno, and I am the tribal chair at Grand Ronde. I am here today in support of 2B215 with the amendments. As a sovereign nation, the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde has worked diligently to build positive government-to-government relationships across all levels of government. We have done so on federal, state, and local levels, including with our local school district. High school mascots are supposed to be inspirational. High schools do not adopt derogatory figures or slogans. They adopt admirable and inspirational figures. The band names Indians, Braves, Warriors, and Chiefs are inspirational Native images, and we do not view them use as derogatory. The Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, along with many other tribes, although I only speak for Grand Ronde, prefer a solution that would allow schools to keep the native mascots if they collaborate with respective tribes on positive portrayals and integrity cultural studies to combat stereotyping. That being said, we are disturbed by the State Board of Education's apparent disregard for sovereignty and their passivity when it comes to ending racism against Native people and mandating that schools in Oregon teach our history. The Grand Ronde Tribe has a long-standing request into the State Department of Education to fund an Indian education specialist, as well as mandate that all Oregon schools teach Oregon tribal history. We are encouraged this legislation session that this might finally get done. There are nine federally recognized tribes in Oregon. The history of our people who have lived in Oregon since time immemorial covers the breadth of the state, and it is either ignored or briefly mentioned in our schools. Most of our Oregon students learn more about the Sioux and the Apaches than do the Umpqua, Molalla, Rogue River, Kalapuya, Warm Springs, Siletz, and other tribes of the nine tribes. why are our children going to school and teaching our teachers about our history? Rather than handing down an unfunded mandate on mascots, the State Board of Education should work towards the reduction and elimination of racism toward Oregon's Native people and include Oregon tribes in its history books, fund an Indian education specialist, and mandate that schools teach the history of the people who have lived on this land since long before explorers, fur traders, and settlers started arriving in the early 1800s. The history of Oregon did not start with the arrival of Lewis and Clark. It was occurring for thousands of years before they set foot on our land, and many of those Indians, braves, warriors, and chiefs are worthy of being honored as high school mascots. Let's work on something that truly makes a difference for the benefit of tribes and all Oregonians. Let's take a long, serious look at teaching all of Oregonian students about the history and culture of Oregon's 9 unique sovereign governments. If more Oregonians were educated about tribal history, society, and culture, would do much more to solve the problems attributed to Indian mascots than simply outlawing the practice. Thank you for your time and encourage your support for SB 215 with the amendments. And just on a personal note, I'd like to say I'm a proud grandfather of 8 kids who are in the Willamina and McMinnville School District. And the thing that disturbs me on this issue is every penny counts out of every dollar today in our school system. So let's make this a positive issue, not a negative issue. Thank you.
Ms. Tom, we have your written testimony up here, so if you don't want to read the whole thing.
I'm not going to read. I just have a couple statements. My name is Kathleen Tom. I'm one of the Tribal Council of the Grand Ronde, and I'm 4 generations of tribal chiefs or tribal council people. I have a long history here, and I just want to say this. Caricatures of Native people, mascots, do not define me as a Native person. My rich history that I just shared with you, being a 4th generation tribal council or chief, that's what defines me. My heart goes out to Shea Butler, that young man that felt that a mascot defined him, because as Native people, we work hard to teach our young people about our rich culture, about our heritage, our way of life. So I just want to say to him that I really feel bad for him, because it shouldn't define who he is. I'd also like to acknowledge tribal elders that are here today, not from my tribe, but to acknowledge them. As I said, my name is Kathleen Tom, and I also want to, this is my wonderful nephew, Justin Martin. And I'll tell you some stories about him. We believe strongly in this issue, that this mascot issue isn't about tribes or Native people. It really isn't. We're really disturbed that the Department of Education took this stance without any kind of consultation with any of the tribes to talk about this and to at least educate them into how we feel as tribes as sovereign governments. When I came and testified in April of 2012, I basically said the same thing. And I'm saying the same thing here today. And I'm glad that this bill has come forward in this way, because I believe that this is a start. But the bigger issue is about educating the Board of Education and school districts about who the tribal people are in this area, to be able to put it in their books, the history of the tribes, all of the tribes here. A lot of people don't even know there's 9 federally recognized tribes, sovereigns here. And it's a shame. It's something that I hope in my lifetime, the next generation of tribal, my family, that they one day will see that in history books about the tribes. So I'm here to support this bill, and I think it's a good start, and I think that you've heard the testimony from our chair, my cousin, that we support this bill and hope that it goes forward. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Tom, or maybe I should call you Aunt Kathleen. I feel like I should. I think this is obviously an emotional issue. We've seen that here today. My sense is a lot of Oregonians just kind of want to do whatever the best thing is here, and yet we have members of tribes who have differing opinions on this, conflicting ideas and opinions. And so that leaves a lot of us a little bit flummoxed on what the right thing is.
Well, and that, again, that's that dialogue between tribes. Like I said, mascots and caricatures should not define us as Indian people. And let me tell you, going to school here at North Salem High School, I was called every kind of name you can imagine. And my brother, he was Tonto, and I'm not going to tell you what I was called. And it was something that, you know, just like being called a redneck or being called something else, it was just, you lived through it. And again, it doesn't define you as a native person. What defines you is your rich culture, your heritage, your way of life, the things that you pass down to your children. So, like I feel bad for Shea Butler, but it should not define who Indian people are. And this burden, I'm a taxpayer too. The burden on the school districts is that shouldn't be happening. They should be spending their money to educate, put the nine tribes in the history books, and ask us to come and educate them about the rich culture that's here within Oregon. So, sorry, I went on too long.
No, it's okay. So did you want to respond to that?
Yes. Although, like I say, I respect everybody's opinion on this. We respect all of our tribal membership. But all nine tribes, the leadership of those tribes speak for those tribes. And I guess that's what we like about this amendment. This would be an issue for us to go speak. We got a school, Amity, about 20 miles from us. We've never had any problem with it. Matter of fact, the one gentleman talked about serving in the service. I served in Marine Corps. I served in Vietnam. And I certainly honor and I respect warriors. I know what a warrior is. So when that comes up, and it'll be an issue for tribes to go, and I'm certainly, I had a question of, do they not understand our culture, or do they intentionally do it? I have to believe they don't understand our culture if they would be derogatory, and that would be for us to explain it to them.
Questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to take up Ed Edmo, Art McConville, Rena Lee, Ciado Edmo.
I think we'll get him. Yeah. My contingent ran out on me.
Us to speak first, and she'll come in.
I'm Ed Edmo. I'm Shoshone Bannock Nez Perce Yakima. I was raised at Slalo Falls, Indian fishing village along the Columbia River. I was raised poor, no electricity, no running water. Now I exchange emails and cell phone numbers with people I don't even know. I'm a writer, actor, storyteller. I tell Indian legends travel around the country. And I'm glad that you offered this time for me to speak with you. I was raised with overt prejudice. Down at the Dalles, Oregon, people would spit on me as I walked down the street. I went to school, I raised my hand. I knew the answer. The teacher wouldn't call on me because I was Indian. That's where I was raised. There were signs in the window saying, no dogs or Indians allowed. You know? There's stories you could go into, stories you couldn't go into. Had to sit in heaven in the theater, in the Granada Theater, could sit on the main floor. One time, me and my brother were sitting on the main floor. I said, Kim, you got to sit in heaven. You can't sit down here on the main floor. My brother said, see this uniform? I fought for this country. I can sit anywhere I want. I'll get the manager. The guy came down, real big fat guy, shaking change in the pocket, making himself feel important. You in the boys in heaven, you can't sit here. My brother said, see this uniform? I fought with the country, I can sit anywhere I can. I'll call the cops. My brother said, go ahead and call the cops. He's a man, I'm a man, he's got a uniform, I got a uniform. Maybe we can talk man to man. The manager never called the cops. Ever since then, Indians were allowed on the main floor. We could go to Johnny's Crib, only restaurant we went allowed into. That's the way I was raised. But I'm not here to cry boo-hoo. I'm here to tell the truth. I'm an educator. I write poetry, plays, short stories, tell Indian legends. I'm a teacher. I don't have a degree. I work with artists in education for over 10 years, telling stories, sharing my culture with the students. What I don't do, when I go east of 82nd Avenue, I don't go out at night. Because I don't still trust the cops, period. I don't. I don't trust people in authority. But now here you're listening to me. You give me soap and dirty water to wash away your star-spangled sins. You tell me to save my beer balls and pop balls. Say it has to do with something you called recycling. You brag about your big melting pot, but it seems everyone who melts, melts white. And all these people, local people, talking about going to their local Indians. But see, let me quote Chief Joseph. Joseph, he said, I have a horse. And he comes to me, he said, can I buy a horse? Joseph says, no. My horse is not for sale. He goes to my brother and says, can I buy Joseph's horse? I said, yeah. So he gives him the money and comes takes the horse. That's what it sounds like these people are trying to do to us. Take your horses again. Thank you.
My name is Art McConville. I'm Nez Perce, Cayuse. I'm enrolled at Pendleton with the Umatilla people. Because a lot of our people from the, my mother's side is from the Wallawa Mountain area under Joseph and Ollicott. Ollicott's our family head. And my dad's side is from Looking Glass's family up at Kuski Kamiai in Idaho. So we come from a war society. That we're considered and called non-treaty people because we never signed nothing. There's five different bands. And I've always been a person who had extreme respect for anybody that deserved that respect. I spent a lot of time in the Marines during Vietnam. and so, like a lot of others, you know, I try to defend my country, my people, in any manner that I can, even if it's talking about things that maybe I think people don't understand or don't really comprehend in the right way, including a lot of our own people. Not necessarily local tribes, but including local tribes. I have people at home who don't understand these kind of issues or speak up about them because they don't really understand the ramifications or how it actually affects people because they're too busy doing economic development, you know, doing things for tourists and building casinos. You know, they're not, they're starting to kind of not hear the traditional people as strong as they used to be. But I tend to represent the traditional people in the spiritual world that we have. And I hear these talk about, well, this word is a native, and that word is a native, and that word is a native. But everyone knows when you talk about warrior, whether it's our word or not, or you talk about brave or all this other stuff, maybe it's not a native word or maybe not it belongs to any specific tribe, but everybody knows what it means, you know. If I say Indian, we know that's not our name. You know, people have called me Indian, and I say, that's not who I am. I'm Nimiipuu, I'm Nez Perce. You know, we call the real people. But it's like in the Marines, they call me chief all the time, but it was in a derogatory way. It was to put me down, keep me in my place. And there were several other names I was called. When we have these names out there and they become common and people take it for granted that it's okay with everybody, it's not okay with everybody. There's a lot of people that don't care, people don't not interested, they don't have time for it, you know, our people. But then we always have to have someone speak up for us and say, well, you know, maybe they say it's going to happen in a good way, to use this word. Maybe that picture is going to be set up there in a good way, but maybe that's how it started. But that's not how it ends. Because after a while, it's used in a different way. It's used to put us down or keep us in our place, to remind us, you know, that they can take everything from us, including who we are. And I know realistically that every day there's someone that's always trying to steal our cultures, trying to steal our spirituality so they can turn it around and make it into their own, some kind of a new age thing, I don't know. But we'll never give it up. And so I feel that even simple things like these names that schools use, that people use, that they think is so unharming to us is very harmful in a sense, because it's only the beginning of more things that will happen, of more opportunities to take things that they think, well, it won't hurt their feelings, they won't feel bad about it. Besides that, what can they do? You know, they can't do anything unless they take us to court. But, you know, even on a larger scale, 20 years ago, talking to archaeologists who were digging up our graves, who were robbing our graves, you know, without anyone's permission. And I talked to a lady, we finally educated her, but it took years to get them together. And she said, well, I didn't know it hurt anybody's feelings. I didn't know anybody, I'd do anything wrong, because she wasn't taught that it was wrong, because nobody teaches anybody what hurts our feelings, what makes us feel bad, what insults us or puts us down. Nobody ever asks us that. And I keep hearing these things about education. Well, we educate them about who we are, and things will be better. We've been trying to do that for 50, 60 years that I know of, and it still isn't happening. How is it going to happen in 10, 20 years from now? Who's going to pay for that, to change all the textbooks that don't include information about us that's the truth? Because there's so many things in there that are left out about the history of the Native people in every area. So nobody understands us. All they know about who we are is what they see on TV and the comic books and, you know, pictures on the wall in a high school. That's all they know about us. And so they go out and they play and they pretend that they know who we are and dress up and put fake feathers on and different regalias and hop around and try to act like us. You know, and so that's their interpretation of who we are. How is that good for our children to witness those things, to see somebody dressing up in little Boy Scout feathers and plastic bones and, you know, regalia and fake this and fake that? And when we go to Powell here in Portland or any place in this area, and we'll always see a handful of people that we call wannabes, that are stepping out there trying to be us. They're trying to steal our culture in any way. And this name thing, this mascot thing, is only beginning. You know, so maybe it don't look like much now. Maybe people don't think about it much or stand up for it. But once it gets serious, then the war will probably start. But then it might be too late. You know, and every time I hear anybody talk about issues like that, about having to change, oh, it's going to cost us so much money to change this, change that. So why is it always about money? You know, why is it all about money? Why can't we be about people? Why can't we be about reality and spirituality? You know, we want to be brother and sister. We got to do it that way. We can't do it with these little things of putting each other down. You know, I imagine that we probably do the same thing, face it out that way, you know, but because we have people that don't understand either. So we're just hoping to find a clear vision, a point of view from everyone, both sides, to really take a look at what this can be in the long run. That's all I have to say. So.
Thank you. Ms. Lee.
Hello, committee. My name is Renee Lee. Last name is spelled L-Y. And I am from the Pascua-Yaqui and White Mountain Apache tribes of the Southwest. I've been a resident of Portland, Oregon for 13 years. And I am a former student of Portland State University. I'm an alumni, also a board member of the Oregon Indian Education Association. And my statement's going to be brief, and it's in regards to the SB 215. Today's issue, I find it to be a personal issue, because it reflects my tribal identity, my culture, and my self-esteem as an indigenous woman here in today's society. Allowing Native American, well, you guys call it Indian mascot imagery, does not honor my tribal heritage, nor does it honor my people. And it does not honor the people of the states as well. I've been involved a lot in my urban Native community in Portland. And I like to say this, and I'm not an object, I'm a human being, and I deserve to live equally as my peers, as other human beings live here. So I just want to thank you guys for allowing us to be here today.
We thank you for your testimony.
I got one more.
Any questions?
We have one more.
Come on.
Good afternoon. My name is Siadam Edmo. I'm Shoshone Bannock Nez Perce in Yakima. I coordinate the Indigenous Ways of Knowing program at Lewis and Clark College, and I'm also the vice president of the Oregon Indian Education Association. I'd like to first acknowledge Chairman Lino and Council Member Tom and you elected officials. Thank you for giving us this venue here today to speak about this issue. I appreciate your leadership and your service and the work that you're doing to resolve this issue. I have three main points to my testimony today. Most of the information that I'm going to talk about today, I've provided all of you with, your committee members, your staff, so that you have ample time to review it. There's one piece that I'll be sure to send along that's missing. First, I want to bring into context this debate on Indian mascots as it applies to our situation by clarifying the scope of research that was used by the Department of Education. And secondly, I want to talk a little bit about the stances by some of the tribes in Oregon, statewide organizations, and national organizations on the issue. I do this for two reasons. First, to put into perspective the difference between the two groups that are for a ban on Indian mascots and against a ban on Indian mascots. And then lastly, I'll discuss a complaint that was filed February 8th in Michigan, which some of you may or may not be aware of, by the Michigan Department of Civil Rights to the U.S. Department of Education that might have bearing on our mascot debate here. So first, the role of research. As lawmakers, you all should have strong and compelling reasons to create or change laws. It should be research-based and not opinion-based, in the best interest of the health and well-being of all Oregonians. While there was ample testimony from opponents of the ban on Indian mascots about their opinion about whether or not Native or non-Natives think the images or representations are offensive or not, the line drawn between the two, psychologists testified, should not at least be the deciding factor about whether or not one should ban Indian mascots or not. Opinion is only actually one small piece of the measurable effect of these mascots on students. And today I will clarify the scope of some of the research and show that even the images that appear that they may be respectful do have negative effects on American Indian Alaska Native students. It was reported to the media that the research behind the decision that was made only included the Chief Wahoo caricature. This is incorrect. In fact, in Dr. Freiberg's testimony, there were four different images that she used. One was Chief Wahoo, one was Chief Illiniwek, one was a positive image, an actual Native person's, it was a ad from the American Indian College Fund, and the last one was the mascot of Haskell Indian Nations. And in her testimony and in her studies, these were double-blind studies where they looked at the effects of these mascots on students that viewed them. What she found was that there was a 15% decrease in Native students' view of their possible selves. Now, possible self is a term in psychology that that includes the self that we desire to be, that we aspire to be, and it also includes things that we fear to become. So, a decrease in a student's perception of their possible self has nothing to do with their opinion. it's an uncontrollable reaction to something that they view or experience. And I've included in my written testimony that I sent to you all prior some of the quotes that, some of her quoted testimony that she talked about, and as well as a link to the full transcript. So secondly, I'd like to talk about the response of the public comment on this rule and resolution that was passed by the State Board of Education. First, respondents in favor of the ban included national and statewide advocacy and governmental organizations, and also included peer-reviewed research and references, and came from all over the state. Respondents opposing the ban included primarily organizations limited to communities who had a history of Indian mascots in the area. In fact, about 75% exclusively from areas that had Indian mascots. It did not include any peer-reviewed research to support their position. So no psychologists, no official testimony from experts coming forward saying there is proof that this does children in schools good. So next, it was reported in the media that the tribes in Oregon either support the use of Indian mascots or were neutral on the issue. These statements are misinformed, and in my testimony to you, I included the links to the official stand of the Coquille Indian tribe as well as the Coos, Lower Umpqua, and Sayusla tribes. Next, state and national governmental and professional organizations. So the United States Commission on Civil Rights opposes the use of Indian mascots in K-12 schools. The National Congress of American Indians opposes the use of Indian mascots in K-12 schools. The National Congress of American Indians, for those of you who don't know, was founded in 1944 and is the oldest and largest, most representative American Indian and Alaska Native organization serving the broad interests of all tribal governments and communities. And its membership includes all 9 federally recognized tribes in Oregon. Among those who wrote in and testified specifically on the ban of the State Board of Education's rule and resolution, COUSA, Oregon's largest immigrant rights organization, NIEA, the National Indian Education Association, BRO, Basic Rights Oregon, Oregon's largest LGBT rights organization, NICWA, the National Indian Child Welfare Organization, OKIPSEE, the Oregon Indian Coalition on Post-Secondary Education, the Oregon Professors in Educational Administration, the Native American Rights Fund, founded in 1970, NARF is the oldest and largest nonprofit law firm dedicated to asserting and defending the rights of Indian people, organizations, and individuals nationwide. The Coalition of Communities of Color. The coalition is made up of 40 culturally specific organizations, including the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, APANO, the Asian Center, the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, IRCO, El Programa Hispano, Self-Enhancement Incorporated, SEI, the Urban League of Portland, the Slavic Coalition, the Native American Youth and Family Center, NAYA, and Africa House, and of course, the Oregon Indian Education Association, OIEA, and the American Psychological Association, all wrote in specifically on Oregon's rule and resolution on the ban of Indian mascots. So as you've seen and heard, the research clearly states and includes all form of Indian mascots produce the same psychological consequences. So the question regarding Indian mascots before you becomes, does the opinion of one outweigh the well-being of others? Is this a responsible stance for you as lawmakers to take? That's all.
Let me rearrange that question and send it back to you, and that is similar to what I asked the previous panel, which is we have conflicting opinions from tribal members on this specific question for us. How do we square that?
So there's a difference between tribal members and tribal organizations and tribal people individually. So tribal, I mean, I'll talk and then you.
My father told me it's easy to find a yes man. They'd come in with the first they shipped in the explorers, then they shipped in the prince ship they lived, they shipped in the map makers and treaty makers. They say, come on, brother, let's sign a treaty. He says, no. I'll go find another Indian that'll say yes and sign a treaty. That's the way it's been done. I think it's wrong.
I would disagree with that character of.
So the issue really is that, and I, the National Congress of American Indians, which is the largest membership organization of tribal governments in the nation, this is their official policy. So the majority of tribes in the United States, this is a resolution was passed by the National Congress of American Indians, NCAI, that states that they are against the use of Indian mascots. So that tells me that overwhelmingly tribes, so elected tribal leadership, send delegates to NCAI, and they vote on resolutions. And this is a resolution that they have passed, overwhelmingly. And, you know, not also, you know, the National Indian Education Association that advocates for the protection of Indian children in public schools and, you know, in the BIA schools as well. So overwhelmingly, I mean, you can.
No, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Other questions for this panel?
Last one.
Senator Rubin.
Thank you very much.
I really appreciate your testimony, and I want to look at it more closely. But in Oregon, we do have a unique situation with our federally organized 9 tribes.
Right.
We have an NCS, we have a committee that we set up with Governor Attia. And much of the stuff that we do with respect to Native Americans, and I believe, having been on that committee as a member from the legislature, that when we start making decisions, one of the things that we made an agreement with them a long time ago was that our agencies should, in fact, ask for their input.
Right.
And what we heard today was when the board, which is an agent of the executive branch, was making their decision, they were not informed or asked.
That's actually not true. So if you refer to the testimony of Pat Burke, who was the Indian Education Specialist prior to Steve Woodcock, who is now the Indian Education Specialist, he approached the government-to-government education cluster back in 2005 when this issue was first brought to the State Board of Education. So if you refer to his testimony, which was on the last day of public comments, he talks about this issue being brought to the government-to-government education cluster, which is the appropriate place that it should have been brought.
In 2005?
Yes.
The decision was made in?
The issue was introduced in 2005.
Right.
And then it was tabled.
Right.
Until recently, until 2012.
Right. But when they came back and it brought it off the table, did they go back and ask, or did they just assume what was?
I am not aware.
Okay. I mean, because I think to show due respect, personally, I would have gone back and made sure that I talked to that same group
mm-hmm.
before I made a final decision.
Yes.
It's important to me. It has been part of my career here to make, we have an institutional relationship with our 9 tribes, and that for me, it is very important that we honor that relationship, and that as we're going forth doing things as a government,
right.
We should make sure that we engage them. Now, my feeling is they could have come up and said, as you mentioned, 2 tribes, and we'll have to check with those because I know them both fairly well because they're in my district.
I included links to their.
Right. And so I'm just saying I would have expected an executive branch decision-making body to at least have gone back and talked to that group of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me. So.
I agree, but I also think, and if you read the report that the superintendent put forward, the research behind the decision was so overwhelmingly compelling. There is a difference between opinion and that research. So,
Senator Cruz.
I would also suggest that research can usually be colored by whoever's paying for it and what results they want. I've seen that over and over and over again. So research can be nonpartisan, but it can also be very partisan.
These were blinded research studies.
I'm just saying.
Is there research on the other side that says that these mascots do people good?
Well, I'm not going to pay for it, no.
That's a good question.
Then are you really invested in keeping your mascot?
Pardon me?
Then do you really, I mean...
What we're attempting to do here is to allow local communities to make the decisions themselves. That's what this bill does, rather than some state board dictating to all the communities and all the tribes. What this bill does is allow the local tribe and the local community to work out their issues and come to an agreement. That's what the Dash 2 amendment of this bill does.
But that's a form of racism, to me.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you. One question, because I am interested in the case you were talking about that is happening in Minnesota, which...
Oh, in Michigan.
In Michigan.
So Lansing, Michigan, February 8th, the Michigan Department of Civil Rights filed a complaint to the U.S. Department of Education about violations that cited all 35 of their schools within the state of Michigan that have Indian mascots. If that ruling goes in favor of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights, it could affect mascots all over the nation.
Thank you.
Pending that decision.
Thank you.
And I'll add some written stuff that I've written. I've made money out of my pain, and I got published several places. I'll put that, mail it to people later.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd like to call up Michael Mason and Craig Loffridge. Thank you both. I don't know how to politely say, be cognizant of the time that's running out on us.
Okay, well, make it quick, Chairman. Chair Haas and members of the Senate Education Workforce Development Committee, my name is Michael Mason. I appear before you today to speak on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Tlazit Indians. I do represent two other tribes, and I'll comment briefly about them and their relationship to this rule. The Confederated Tribes of Tlazit Indians have asked me to be here today to support the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 251. They are consistent with the collaborative spirit expressed in Tlazit's Tribal Resolution 2012-082, which you have. The Tlazits have a problem. Their high school teams are called the Tlazit Indian Warriors. Under the rule, they would have to stop using that term. The reason they use the term goes back to the Rogue River Wars. The greatest defeat of U.S. arms on the West Coast was inflicted by the Indians, who now, many of whom are proud to say the descendants at Tlazit. And I want to just very briefly read from The People Are Dancing Again by Professor of Indian Law Charles Wilkinson, who used to teach at U of O. The Battle of Hungry Hill lasted 2 days. The Indians, fighting from the concealment of pine trees and thick underbrush, repeatedly repulsed charges from the Americans. The volunteers' attempt to trap tribal warriors from the rear failed because of the exposure they faced coming down a bare ridgeside. Heavy fire raged for most of the day. On the second day, the Indians surrounded their opponents but were beaten back. By the afternoon, the Americans had had enough, exhausted and short of water, with 11 dead. The regulars and volunteers made their way back to Fort Lane and other parts of the Upper Rogue River Valley. The tribes lost the most men, but all acknowledged they were the victors in this pitched battle. They had defended their homeland and forced the retreat of the largest American fighting force ever assembled in Oregon. This is why it's the Tlazit Indian Warriors. There is no denigration, there is no discrimination in a tribe calling its own team the Tlazit Indian Warriors because of their pride in their ancestors fighting for their country. So I urge you to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to this bill and encourage the kind of collaboration that Senator Roblin has talked about, Senator Cruz has talked about, that honors this state every day and has for decades, and makes this state unique in the United States. I would also say, not that I'm here to testify on their behalf on this, but the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs and the Coquille Tribe, who I represent, are in favor of the Tlazits being able to keep the name of their school and their mascots. So I'm happy to answer questions, but thank you very much for hearing this and trying to make sense out of some very significant testimony, and in no way is the Siletz tribe trying to say that the use of mascots has not been abused, in no way. But they have their own problem with their own high school that was created by this new rule, and did not feel that they were heard when they testified to the Board of Education about that specific problem. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Craig Lockridge. I'm from Molina, Oregon, and I'm a resident of the Molalla River School District, where they call themselves Indians. And I apologize for the fact that I'm probably not going to be politically correct or as well-spoken as many of the other people who've been up here, but that's not my forte. So I've kind of assembled some notes kind of try to keep me on track, and I won't waste, I'll try not to waste a lot of your time. One thing that I thought of immediately when I heard these people testify before me is that I wondered if Indians throughout the United States are so overwhelmingly opposed to using the name Indian or Braves or Warriors to identify themselves, why it is there are so many schools run either by or for Indians that use the name Indians as the name for their teams in many other states. So I'll just throw that out there. But I don't think that this rule that the state made, oh, and by the way, I need to throw this out here right now. While I live in the Molalla River School District, I'm here speaking only on behalf of myself, in case there are any other people in the room who wonder if I'm speaking on behalf of some other organization. I think this ban was more politically motivated than anything else, and I want to say also that while I favor the bill, I personally oppose the amendment to it, because I don't think personally that this ban is necessarily a problem just with discrimination. It's a problem with free speech and allowing communities to be able to express themselves. I personally find it very offensive that anybody should think that I should wear a dress, yet that is how my ancestors are depicted at McKay High School and McNary High School here in Salem. You'll never catch me wearing a kilt. My ancestors, I learned some years back why it is, if you look up my last name in a book on surnames, you'll never find it. My ancestors were serfs, essentially slaves, in England, before they were eventually freed by the king and allowed to leave and emigrated to Ireland, and then eventually came here from Ireland in the 1700s. I think we all know what kind of discrimination they faced. And I think to single out one particular group as sort of saying that they're worthy of not being discriminated against while no other group is, just seems somehow wrong. I'm not saying that we should be able to discriminate against any group. I think that the rules that we make as a society need to be applied equally to everybody.
Mr. Lockridge,
yes, sir.
Could you conclude? Could you wrap it up here just in the interest of time?
Absolutely. So the one last thing I'll add, because I have a lot of things I'd like to say, but the one last thing I'll just add, and the rest I can write it up and submit it in a letter, is that I took a survey, an online survey, as a resident of the community. I went around to as many people and community organizations I could get, and tried to get as broad a cross-section of the society as I could get in Molalla. The survey is still in progress. As of yesterday, I pulled up the results. I have them here printed, and I'd just like to share them with the committee that show how people feel about the mascot and how much money they're willing to spend not to change, but to fight the state's ban.
Thank you. Questions, ladies and gentlemen? Thank you. Michael, thank you for your eloquence, as usual.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members.
We have about 2 minutes left in this room. And I will, we have a couple people that we're not going to get to, and we will accept some written testimony as well. Ken Naylor and Susan Hansen. I hate to tell you to rush through or be brief, but we lose our committee hearing room here.
Chairman Haas, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm here to oppose Senate Bill 215 and 501. I participated since early last 2012 in learning about these issues. I'm from Molalla School District. I am highly chagrined at the icons used in Molalla. I'm chagrined to have learned after the fact that the Che Butler incident, which we've heard about today, happened in Molalla. It wasn't a minor incident. It was a half-naked person at the halftime pretending to be a Native American running around with a target on his chest. I find the idea that my community member circulated a petition to find out what the people in the Molalla would be willing to spend to fight this ban kind of ludicrous, because a year ago I saw my school board member sit here and complain about the cost to change the mascot. So I question all these districts that, on the one hand, want to preserve, I think, a civil rights violation against our smallest minority, and then turn around and want to say they have the money to fight vigorously to protect a, I think, pretty horrible image. We have a pretty orange clip art head of an Indian in a ludicrous headdress that is used for advertising. It is on top of a scoreboard. It's a giant baseball with the Indian head on it. We have spray-painted Indian heads all over lockers. We have teepee ceremonies at the soccer field. And we have some sort of Indian ceremony reenactment at the high school when it opens every summer. I could go on and on. I've documented the icons. I couldn't believe it when I took a camera out. I don't have children in the school district. I have rural property that is, I'm privileged to live on, that has turned out to be a major archaeological site. So I've had interaction with the Grand Ronde and other tribes. It's not just the Grand Ronde that represent that area. Warm Springs have tribal members from that area, and so do the Salettes. I question how any one tribe can decide for a nation that has Native American citizens and their children who could end up in any school system. I heard testimony in April 27th last year when we all came to testify in front of the state board. A Woodburn Native American school teacher from the Native Southwest said that the pueblos in the Southwest are highly diverse and don't some allow cameras or pictures of their own people to be taken on site. I called pueblos just to do the research, and it was true. They were all over the place, but most of them had strict rules about icons at all being used. Last night at Reed College, I attended an amazing seminar called Native American Appropriations. It was first amazing to see the work that the Native American Youth and Family Culture Center in Oregon is doing to teach young Native Americans to have pride in their cultural heritage. They had young children come out.
We need to conclude. We need to wrap it up.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, I'm highly in favor of maintaining the ban. I think the State Board of Education did amazing work. It's all posted online, and I found my school district has done nothing to educate the community about any of the issues. All of these interactions could have happened long ago. Native American history could have been taught, and it hasn't happened. So I think it has nothing to do with any respect. It all has to do with white power privilege being preserved in a tiny number of communities in our state. It's a nationwide movement. I urge you to read Indian News Today and do the research yourself. This is not about Oregon. It is about respect for Native Americans nationally. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 215. Thank you all for your patience. Thank you, committee. No further business is before us, so we are adjourned.